So hello everyone and welcome to our Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training Foundations Level Curriculum and Content Call. And these are new calls that we just started recently, and the purpose of these calls was for us to get together and discuss curriculum and content. So discuss the content of the various modules and to answer any questions that you have, or if you have questions about how to apply what you're learning in the modules, these are the places to do it. So these are different than our open coaching calls in that with the open coaching calls, it's pretty much anything goes, whatever questions you have about particular clients, whether it's in a module that we've already covered or not, those are fair game, and we can look at labs and various things like that. On these calls, we really decided to do these calls basically from requests from people who said, well, you know, I feel kind of bad asking questions on these calls with case studies and there's all this advanced information and I have these basic questions, or people who had said, well, you know, they're just quick questions and I feel like I just get overwhelmed with some of the content on case calls. So we decided to add these because I think that it is important for us to discuss content, and I think questions do come up, especially, you know, as we get more and more advanced in the content, that it's you know, sometimes it's confusing and sometimes it's new to be learning, you know, or going deep into biochemical pathways, and maybe you're wondering why we do it, why we go into that kind of depth. So for those who, everybody has opened up through module four, so that would be the introduction to in nutritional endocrinology, which is pretty heavy duty. It sounds like a lightweight module, but it's pretty heavy duty because that's where I teach all the interactions between the hormones and the various systems, a lot of hypothalamic and pituitary stuff because we don't have separate modules on those. We incorporate that into a variety of them. Module two is all about the cellular metabolism, and cellular metabolism is really important because that's the Krebs cycle. That's how we create energy, and I decided that that would be a good place for us to really start digging in, is to start to look at the nutrition of the Krebs cycle. So some of these modules that we have in the program are geared towards heavy duty on the endocrinology side with how to do manipulate on the nutritional side, and then some of them are really based on the nutritional side. So the cellular metabolism is creating you the framework of how your body makes energy, so that when you are working with people who have low energy, you can start to see some of the places where you can intervene nutritionally to help them out, in addition to looking at, say, you know, thyroid, adrenal, and other kinds of hormones and systems. And then the next two modules, macronutrients and micronutrients, they're going to take some time to go through. So if you're new and you're thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, I haven't finished the macronutrients, and now you just opened up micro, take your time, and what I would recommend is even as new modules get opened after that, that you just set aside that you're going to just even one a week watch, listen to, get engaged with a particular nutrient. And that will help you, and you can do that throughout the whole program. There's no reason you have to keep up with what we're doing in terms of, well, the next module, because those you can just be picking one nutrient a week. That module got out of hand for us. I was expecting it to be a much shorter module, but as I started to put it all together, I really realized that the depth of information that would be helpful for you to know about at least the key nutrients, the key micronutrients that we present, was really clinically relevant. And to really understand B12 or B6 or the role of folate and how those things all fit together is super important as you're working with clients and with all sorts of problems. So those are long. It's a long module. I think we've got probably 20 hours in there so far, and there are still a few nutrients that we're presenting. So we've been presenting these live on calls every week or two until we finish them up, and that's what we'll continue to do. And so you're all welcome to come to those live or just wait, you know, a week or so for us to get that information onto the site. So we've got a couple more coming, not this Thursday. We usually do them on Thursday afternoons, but this Thursday I'll be traveling. I'm going to see my son in Florida, so I won't be available to do that, but the following week we will. And my goal then is to finish up the B vitamins. Again, I thought we were going to finish up the B vitamins weeks ago, but each of them has come out to be somewhere in the neighborhood of an hour to an hour and a half. So there's a lot of great information there for you. So my, and then we have a few more micro minerals, and those don't take very long to finish up. So wherever you are in this process, whether you've just recently started and you're just delving into that micronutrients module, or you've been with us for a year and you're just really digging into that module, it doesn't matter. You can keep up with it. You can do it at your own pace. So what else? We will be doing a mini test quiz at the end of each of those modules. Each of the nutrients, we'll be adding that later, and then there'll be a final exam at the end of that big module. So we'll give you all the information when that's available. What else can I tell you? What else is coming up? I've been working on a really fun module, which is finishing up, will be the finish up of the digestion module, which I think is now module 6. We've rearranged the modules a little bit. But that one is really fun because it's such a new area, and that's the endocrinology of the digestive tract. So there's two pieces to that module. One is the endocrinology of appetite, and then the other one is the endocrinology of the digestive tract itself. The appetite piece is like cutting-edge science. They first discovered some of these hormones that control appetite back in the 1990s, like 1995. So you've heard of leptin and ghrelin. I've talked about that a lot, but there's others, adiponectin and NF-kappa-beta, and there's so many others that have control over appetite. And because we see a lot of people who are either emotional eaters or they're overweight because they overeat, because they just have this big appetite, or it's just a matter of the appetite because of the weight has been turned on permanently. So we're going to talk a lot about that, and that I think is going to be so valuable for you when you're working with clients. And like I said, this is cutting edge, and I don't know of any place else where this is being taught to this level of depth. So it's going to be really fun to go through that. And then I'll go from there into the 25 to 30 key hormones of the digestive tract. Not that you're going to memorize them. I certainly don't. I have my chart, my cheat sheet, but I memorize the key ones. And then some of the others are going to be there to help you to just see the overall picture. And then you'll really be able to talk to people when they're having some digestive issues that don't seem to be responding to some of the basics. And you'll have some more advanced strategies that you can use with them. So that's about all I wanted to say. Let me think if there was anything else. I'm working on the sleep module, and again, because there's so much cutting-edge information, and because that's so tied in to some of those hormones of appetite regulation, that's a really great module too, and that's almost finished as well. So we're almost finished with the content of the foundations, and then most of the content for the mastery section has been developed in its first round, and those are going to all be updated and put into the site. One thing I will say about content-wise, we are evaluating right now and are probably like 90% sure we're going to go with this, is we found a different platform for hosting the membership site. It's still going to be on WordPress, but it's a different plugin to manage all the membership levels, et cetera. And we're super excited about it, and we're hoping that gets up sometime in mid to late March. And that's going to have progress pieces, progress check-offs within each module. So when you go into a module, you'll know, oh, I did the pre-work. Oh, I reviewed this. I watched the video. I took the pre-test. I did my assignments. And all of those things are going to be laid out, and you can keep track of exactly where you are, and then the exam will be integrated right there. As soon as you pass the exam, automatically opens up the next module for you. That's what we're aiming for. We're told that migration could take about a month, and we're in the process of just negotiating that with a company that's going to do it for us. So I'm excited because it's something I've been dreaming about for a long time for this, and I've been even trying to dream up in my space between the cracks there, ways that I could jerry-rig the current membership site we have to do that sort of thing. And when I found this other one, or one of my team members actually found it, I was like in heaven, and it has everything that we are really looking for. And I love the concept of the progress. And even to the point where if you start watching a video, you get about halfway through the video and you get interrupted or a third of the way through, when you come back into that module, it will remember where you left off. So real exciting, cool stuff, and we'll give you more information as that evolves. One last thing before we go into questions that you might have is that we finalized on the retreat. I am so excited about the retreat. It was a very long and arduous process. We've never done any negotiations with hotels that aren't in our immediate area. And quite frankly, they weren't really cooperative, but we finally settled with a place that's right on the beach. It's the Serrata Resort. It's not the exact dates I was ideally wanting, but it's the 24th through the 26th of May. And I will be having to leave the day right after on the 27th because I'm speaking at a holistic health conference in Toronto on Saturday. So we'll be there. I will be there earlier, so if anybody wants to come down earlier and hang out and get some beach time, that's great. We are planning to make it to incorporate the fun pillar into it and to have as much outdoor time as everybody wants and to be able to do some of our activities outdoors. So I'm really excited about it. And, so the 24th through the 26th, we don't have the codes and everything from the hotel yet in order to get you to register. So as soon as we have those, we'll send out an email to everyone and asking you to let us know, yes, no, or, you know, tentative maybe. But we really need to be able to hone in sooner rather than later to be able to tell the hotel the numbers that we're expecting of people so that the room that they gave us facilitates the number of people that are coming. If we suddenly have double the amount of people, if everybody in the program decides to show up, then we're going to just need a bigger room, and that's fine. We'll make sure that that happens. But I want to know sooner rather than later. So please look at your calendars. If there's any way you can possibly come, because it's a truly valuable experience. I know Tony and Glenn and Karen, who are on the line right now, came to last year's or the year before's or both, and can just share with you, and maybe we can get some sharing going on Facebook to really get the value of being there and in person and the value of what we call the spotlight coaching sessions. I was recently at a mastermind group where they started calling them the love seats because it's a way for you to get the attention of the entire group to share one of the things that you really need. What's the thing that's holding you back most in your practice? And it could be anywhere from a specific strategy about a specific marketing thing, and it could be a personal thing. And we've had all of that stuff show up. Some of it is actually someone's particular health issues. So I'm there to facilitate, and the group is there to support whatever it is you need going forward. And I will tell you, it's been transformational. And what we're seeing in the folks that were there last year is them acting on these hot seat or spotlight coaching or love seat, whatever you want to call them, sessions, and making really great strides in their business. So there's something about being there and having the focused attention of a mentor and a group that can just be magical. So if there's any way for you to be there, be there. It will not be live streamed. We might pull a section where we can live stream it, but live streaming something like that, it just doesn't cut it. It's not the same, and plus the expense and the invasiveness of it, it's not the same as a big event where it's fine to have a crew in there. I really don't want outside people in that room with us just because it's a personal, there's a lot of personal sharing and breakthroughs. So they will not be live streamed. We will informally set up a video camera, and then we'll get those up so people can watch that. And the most mostly the reason for doing that is for helping people to be able to hear their stuff. But what I recommend you do is you have a cell phone, an iPad, whatever you have that could record, and that when you're having your seat that you give somebody your recorder and have them record for you. So, well, you'll get all the information about that once we get there. So May 24th to 26th, and it's St. Petersburg, Florida, and the nearest airport is Tampa, and that's where I'll be flying into, actually 2 weeks before it, because I have some other stuff going and my son's graduation the weekend before. So I'll actually be in Florida for 2.5 weeks, and I'm excited. So the way that we're going to do this call today is we're going to look at raising your hand if you have a question, a comment, something you want clarification on, or a resource to share with folks that's related to any of the modules that you've been working on. So I'd love to see you raise your hand with a 1 if you have any questions or comments or things that you want clarified, and a 5 if you have something you'd like to share, you know, a resource, a lab testing thing, anything at all that you'd like to do. So I'm going to look at the chat. Oh, unlock the meeting. Okay. And weird, the meeting was unlocked. I wonder why you couldn't get in, Jamie. It looks like we only have a few people. We have Martha and Sequoia on the web. If any of you want to join and have a chat that way, it's join.me. And I'm looking at Sequoia said, that sounds like a great idea to track your progress online. What's the platform called? Yeah, the platform is called Access Ally, A-C-C-E-S-S-A-L-L-Y, if you want to check it out. You'll see the direction we're going, and they have a plugin that you put on top of it called Progress Ally. And they work together, and it provides this really great learning environment. And then the Food Dogma module, that's going to be done similar to how we're doing the nutrients one, just because there's so much there. Again, I was expecting to do, you know, 3 or 4 hours of it, but I've got so much information compiled that I've separated into individual stuff. So whether it comes before or after sleep, it'll probably come concurrently at some point. They'll overlap. So my goal is to start the Food Dogma one at the beginning of March. Okay, and then the digestive one will be finished. I'll just record those in the background, and those will be updated and put together. And then if any of you want to apply for the Digestive Mastery Practitioner certification, you can do that. And Stacy just finished the requirements for that to put up. So if you want that as a certification, if you don't have other certifications and you're looking to have a good certification and a certificate to hang on your wall, then I would recommend that you go through that. It'll force you to actually start to apply the stuff in there. And if you have any questions about it, you can always pull those up on any of the calls and we'll explain to you more. So I think Stacy was just finishing up with the description of exactly what needs to be done to get that. So it's a really good thing to do, and it'll give you practice for when you do the full certification. That's it. Thank you. Sequoia just posted the link if anybody wants to look at that to Access Ally. Very interesting, and it's, you know, it's the kind of thing. There's a lot of platforms out there that you can use now for memberships and for learning platforms. We use Infusionsoft for managing all of our people, you know, all of our contacts. And if you use that, they're more limited in which ones you can use. And the one we're using right now was, it's real cumbersome. It's clearly was developed by some, you know, geeky nerd geeks in the background, you know, who just weren't really looking at the usability. The people that actually, Martha's having trouble with her pin. You tried the backup pin? I'll put a pin in there to see if you can get a pin to work. Basically, it was developed by somebody who was using the platform we're using and got frustrated with a lot of the downtime that they were having, similar to what we're having. Every time they upgrade their software, we suffer, and I just don't want that anymore. So the person that developed this Access Ally is someone who I actually met personally and had a, you know, kind of an interaction with a few years back, and I was excited to see that she developed this. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that works out because I think it'll be an awesome platform. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look up a pin for Martha. Not sure why your pin isn't working. Somebody's typing. Somebody's not muted. So if you are listening in on the web, go ahead and just mute your line so that we don't have. Who is that? Is that Martha? You can say hello if you're typing. You're on the web. Who is that? Is that Sequoia? for Martha. Okay, so you're on there, so you can listen in there, no worries. I'm looking to see if I can find another pin, a backup pin that I can give you. Somebody who I know is not on. Why are some of these people in here that aren't even in the program anymore? Here, she's not on the call. Let me give you, I'll just type it in and you can try it. Here. 428920. Okay, try that pin if you want to get on the call itself. Okay, so questions, let's see. Okay. Questions, comments? Anything? You're all so quiet today. Is this going to be a short call? We created these calls because we thought you would like them. And we have one a month, so if you don't have questions, you can just incorporate this back. Okay, so it looks like Michelle has a question. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Dr. Rita Marie, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have a question, and I'm not sure if this is the right call to ask it on, but I had mentioned on the Facebook forum that I was looking for a way, like wanting to know, like how you all search for like studies or kind of like confirmation. There's been a lot of chatter about wanting information that backs this up or backs that up, and it's like, is there a way to like search for studies, or how do you find like your studies or your printed documentation outside of like the NEPT program? You know, if we're looking for something specific that backs up something that we want to teach on.
Yeah, so you're looking for studies. Really what you want is medical studies are good. I mean, there are other things, but I think the most relevant are, or that give people good confidence, are medical studies. That said, people can call medical studies that do whatever it is that they that show whatever they want to show. So then it's a matter of
now in presentation mode.
The other thing is that you have to be careful about who funded the study. So if you have a study that's funded by the, you know, the M&M's people, right, and they're gonna create a study that shows you that the ingestion of, you know, up to 3/4 of a cup a day of M&M's has no impact on the risk of diabetes, right? If they wanted to show that, they could show it, right? So first of all, let's just get started with that. That is a good question because as we're going through, you know, I'm always finding studies and putting them in there, but you kind of try to look for studies that back up what you already know to be true. That's usually what we're looking for. If it's the other way, where you're actually looking for real information, the studies aren't not necessarily the best place to get them. The best place to get them would be people who are actually doing, microbiologists and people who are actually in the labs and like uncovering hormones and looking at the way they run and running clinical trials that are actually relevant. So you can't say that if a study is not a double-blind placebo-controlled study, and I'll explain what that means in a moment if you don't know, that's run by, you know, a major university and published in a Medline-approved publication. That doesn't mean that the content is not valid. So there's a lot that has to do with it. So first of all, I would say if you want to find the more referenceable studies, when you're doing a search, don't do a Google search. Go to Google Scholar. So just type in, it'll get you there. And that will show you references into a lot of the medical journals. That's one thing. The other thing you can do is go to Medline. So just do a type of search for Medline, and Medline is it's like an index of all the medical studies and all the various referenceable journals. So, you know,
is that Medline like all one word or two separate words, or does it matter then?
I mean, Google, it doesn't matter. You can spell it wrong and you'll still find it. Yeah, so just do a Google search on Medline.
Okay.
The exact address of it is, but it's something like NIH.gov, something NIH.gov. And that'll get you in there, and then you can see all the published articles. That can be overwhelming. So typically what I'll do if I'm looking for information about a particular topic, I'll type the words in Google. I look down at all of the different articles that are referenced. The ones that are on the quote-unquote popular sites, the ones that are loaded with advertising, generally skip, or I might glance at just to see what they have to say, like LiveStrong and even things like WebMD and those sorts of things. Those are heavily advertising. So I don't really, I look at that, but that's not where I'm going to, you know, send you a link to and say, wow, this is a good study. I use those as preliminary stuff. I just get general information that way. So I skip a lot of the ones that are, you know, John Smith's blog, or I might look at John Smith's blog if it looks like an interesting kind of a topic, and then I'll look to see what where he's referencing and what his information is. And I'm always bouncing it off of what I know to be true in the science. So if I have people who are throwing out some popular press-type stuff that isn't necessarily grounded in science, I may not use that information. So I just kind of do those things. I'll read abstracts. If a study looks like it's got more information, more depth that I want to go through and see how they did the study, how many people were in the study. Like sometimes you'll look at, they're looking at, does it matter if a person eats, I don't know, X number of grams of sugar a day, it increased their risk of various diseases. And what I'll do is I'll look at that, but I'll look at who did they compare them to. A lot of times who they're comparing them to. So this group had, you know, X number of grams of sugar, and this other group, they fed them, you know, basically gluten crackers. But and they didn't see a difference between the two groups, right? So you have to look at what are they comparing.
Kind of like the nursing study where they were trying to decide whether or not the levels of I think it was the levels of vitamin D were increased for some reason or another, and they were using that nurse's study.
Mm-hmm.
And someone commented, like, well, what is their diet, you know?
Exactly.
It was something like that, and it's like, well, yeah, they didn't really take that into account. I mean, I was curious because I sort of feel like I want to I've been working kind of on my niche stuff on the business side of it, and I really feel led to do something with, like, the adrenal fatigue and the stress and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking, you know, I did Google, like, stress relief and different things like that on the Internet, and it's like you said, it's so general and heavily advertised, and, I mean, I could have probably wrote up what they wrote on there just but from what I know, because I
probably know more. Yeah.
I know a lot about, yeah. And it's like, well, this doesn't really give me more of what I was looking for. Like, how do I, you know, find more studies on that and better information?
Like better information. People who are really, like, there are people out there who have their popular blog, and that's why I said I will go to John Smith's blog, but I look at it to see, like, there's some people who write really great blogs, and they don't necessarily reference everything that they have in there, and some of them do, but they write really good in-depth blogs, and so that's the stuff that you look at. And the studies are not always going to be there, like for adrenal fatigue, right, because it's not recognized as a medical disease. You either are healthy or you have Addison's disease, which is an autoimmune attack on the adrenals, and they're completely shot. And medicine doesn't necessarily recognize that there's a difference. So you're not going to find a lot of studies on that. You can look up Hans Selye. He started the whole, you know, talking about it. He's an MD, wrote a book, The Stress of Life, back in the 50s. So that's a great place to look. And books are great. You know, textbooks are often good, but books written by people who research, like Mike Mutzel, who had Speak With Us, he writes amazing books. His book is half references, very scientific, very in-depth, versus there's other people out there who like these sloppy books that are just, they're spewing somebody else's opinion who got it from somebody else, and it's not grounded in science. It just takes a little finesse, and it just takes experience. And so just let yourself look through the stuff that's out there. And you can even look and make your own evaluation and say, well, you know, I know more than that, and I don't think that's true. Right? Or I've studied that and I don't think that's true, so that might not be a good source for you. Or, you know, I disagree with that. And there's so many people out there, they're doing paleo. doing, and there's a lot of great things about the modern paleo diet, but a lot of them are taking it to an extreme and saying, yeah, we're going to eat, you know, bacon all day long. Like, that's not a paleo food. I'm sorry, back in the you know, Paleolithic era, they didn't know how to make bacon. You know, they were eating everything on the animal. They were eating the organs, the brain, the kidney. They didn't let anything go to waste. They didn't extract the fat and have a larger percentage or portion of fat compared to the food. So it's like some of these things fly in the face of reason. So you have to think about, you know, things that make sense. If people are testing with fractured foods, not real foods versus real foods, and we know that when you take somebody who's been on a standard American diet and you just put them on real food, no matter what they're, whether they're vegetarian, paleo, whatever, you put them on real unprocessed food, there's a huge shift in their health. And so you're looking for studies that also take that into account, and that's why I think our program is relatively unique compared to other health coaching and health practitioner programs out there, because we're really looking in depth at the food piece of it and the food and the herbs and that, as opposed to just, you know, paying lip service to that, but really relying heavily on supplementation. So that's how I basically do it. I just spend hours and hours, and one of the tools I would highly recommend that you get for keeping track of all the articles you find is something called Evernote. And you can install it for free on your computer. If you end up using it a lot like I do, you pay $5 a month for it. And you basically can set up a little Evernote clipper. And you put that on your browser. And when you find an article that you go, wow, that's a really good article, but it's long and it looks like it has a lot of good stuff, I'm going to save it for later. I'm going to look at it later. And you can just save them, and then you can go back to them. And the beauty of Evernote is that even if you're not on your own computer, or you have a laptop and you have a home computer and you have an iPad and an iPhone, it from any of your devices anywhere. So I highly recommend it. For me, it's a great research tool. So I may be like looking and going, yeah, not that one. Oh, that's a good one. And I save it, and then I go back later and I read the articles.
Okay. So it's kind of like a sort of like a notepad or something. I mean, your computer.
Yeah, you can actually take notes, and that's how I do notes. If I'm talking to a client, I'm typing in notes as I go, but I don't want to type when I'm on the phone with them because it sounds rude, almost like they hear you type. They don't know you're not writing emails to someone else and not listening to them.
Right.
So I just on my iPad, and I just type it in, and then that automatically just syncs up with all the devices. So I have it on my iPad, and then it'll be on my computer in no time at all after that, and I just keep track of it. And you can do files and folders, and so you can create a health research, and then you can have a subfolder that's on insulin resistance, and another one that's on adrenals, and another one that's on thyroid, and another one that's, you know, foods.
So it's really easy to organize what you're collecting.
Exactly, once you collect it, because when I used to do research in the old days, I used to have, you know, I'd go to the Stanford Medical Library when I was living out in California, and I would, you know, I got in there and I get all these articles and I print them out, so it'd take me hours and hours to find them, and then these big binders, and I'd have to photocopy them, and then take those photocopies home, and I'd come home with a stack, like, you know, 3-foot stack of paper, and then I'd have to sort through them and highlight them, and oh my God, that was the olden days, yes. Now you can just clip it all to Evernote, and most of the studies are available online. Some of them you have to pay for the full article, but some of them you can get enough of the information from the abstract. And then if you really wanted the full article and it's something critical to something you're doing and researching, you can always order it.
I was just curious about that, how to go and, like, get more information without getting that general stuff that was, you know, because what I find is when you just Google a topic, a lot of times what you Google, you know, you try to be specific, and then it brings up more general stuff, and half the stuff it brings up doesn't really coordinate with what you want.
Yeah. You get some general ideas.
Yeah.
Based on the articles you find, you can even hone it down more. And when I go into Medline, I'll search for specific combinations. I might start simply by saying, okay, cervical cancer and herbs, cervical cancer and micronutrients, you know, cervical cancer, natural cures. And I just would type in a whole bunch of different things based on the topic or the subject, the medical subject I'm looking to be researching. And then get, and the more you get there, the more you do it, the better you get at it, and the more you find what's junk, and the more you're able to filter and know what's junk and what's good stuff.
Yep. Okay, thanks a lot. That really helps.
You're welcome. Bye. Any other questions? Did that help? Did anybody like listening to that? Does anybody have anything to add to that? Like those of you who are researchers, do you have anything to add to how you research? Martha said, a good ethical search engine recommended by Carolyn Dean is Good Keeper. Oh, cool. I've never heard of that before. Thank you. And Sequoia posted www.nlm.nih.gov. So that's an ethics link. And then also greenmedinfo.com. Great. Okay, thank you for those resources. Anybody else have resources? Anybody else have questions? Comments? Jamie, cool. www.sci-hub.io. IO or LO? Yeah, IO. Yeah, and there's some good people who write really good blogs that are well-referenced and researched. Carolyn Dean is one of them. Chris Kresser has some good stuff out there. Isabella Wentz always researches her stuff well. Who else? I'm sure there's others. There's a lot of others, but those are the more popular kinds that come to my mind as people who really do a good job on researching. You know, and when you're writing blog posts, there's always that trade-off between putting really good content out there but getting it seen. So you're, like, highlighting and doing what's called the keywords and all that. So, I mean, I like to write long and very detailed blog posts, and then I was advised to make them shorter, and I just haven't written blog posts in a while. So I'm going to get started on that again. So questions about micronutrients. Anybody have any questions about the micronutrients, the minerals, the vitamins? Okay. So one of the things that some of you have done already, and we will be getting back to you on that. We're just kind of got behind schedule on it. But we did, in our first year, we did the micronutrient assignment. And we're going to change the way we do assignments from now on. It's going to be in the module that it's related to. Not every module will have an assignment, but the assignments are more geared towards giving you something practical to do about a particular topic. So with the micronutrients, everybody is going to get asked to choose a micronutrient, and then once you've chosen the micronutrient, to write a paper about that micronutrient. And we have specific guidelines. It's just a little short page and a half to two-page paper that is something that's written at a level that would make a good handout for giving a client. Like you decide that this person really is low in vitamin C. I want them to understand a little bit about vitamin C and where they find vitamin C and what it does in their body, and here is a paper about it. So we're going to have everybody write one of those. That's part of your certification requirements. I know when Steph did hers, she ended up making a little audio out of it and had all these fun. It was really fun. She, like, made it fun, but she also had the paper. So, you know, do it in a way that it would be engaging and fun for your client to read, and that would save you from having to explain to them in grueling detail why you think vitamin C is good for them to take. Then they could just ask questions about that. So, and once we get these, you know, we'll get a bunch of them that have already been submitted. We're going to get them compiled into a PDF document or a Word document and then a PDF that we're going to give everybody, so that you'll have these little handouts, and everybody that creates one is giving permission to others to leave their copyright intact and their website address intact, but that you can use it to give some of your clients so you don't have to create one on your own. So Sequoia said, when are we going to share those micronutrient papers? When are we going to put them into the booklet, we're just figuring out how to do that. The biggest problem was how do we do it and keep up with it, and as new ones come in, make sure that you have an updated version of it. So if you guys have any recommendations there, that would be awesome. Okay, so let's see. Will the chat be saved? Yeah, I'll have to make sure to save it. Lynn is not on the call today. She is actually in my area, and she's been staying with me, and she made an appointment with a very famous dentist, a holistic dentist in this area called Dr. Nunnally, and she's not back yet, so she'll probably be back later. So, yeah, I'll save this chat for you for sure. And you can always save it, too. So if you're on, usually I save the chat more for the people that are not on. Just go and highlight the whole thing and just copy-paste. And you can have that. You don't have to rely on us to do it. I usually save it for folks that can't make it to the call and they're listening later. Okay, so I don't see any other questions content-wise. So Jamie, I don't see why not. Jamie wants to go over a Dutch test, a question about the effects of taking oral hormones. So, yeah, sure. Let me go here and assign you as a pass the presenter role. Passing it to you, Jamie, and then I'll open up your line. Jamie, you're open, and I passed you the presenter role, so I'm going to open up here. And all you have to do is say accept or something like that, Jamie. Oh, you have to download. Ooh, I thought you've done it before. Oh, Michelle said it came on the chat late, so the older posts aren't showing up. Yeah, I forgot about that. I'm going to make a copy of it right now just in case. I can't do it while Jamie is doing it. So while Jamie is downloading the app, and Jamie, once you do that, if you save it to your desktop, you won't have to do it again. Anybody else have a question? Yeah, that's what Jamie's going to do. He's going to share the Dutch test on the screen. Okay. Jamie, your line is open.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, sure. So tell us a little bit about this this patient, client.
Okay. She has been on a journey with taking oral hormones, synthetic hormones, taking testosterone and estradiol, estrogen, and she's been a bit all over the place seeing practitioners in London, in the UK. They've just been running blood tests, though, on her hormones, and she hasn't had a urine hormone test run. So she, in terms of her symptoms and everything, she started to get, you know, quite aggressive and, you know, typical, you know, taking too much testosterone. That was the first thing that I thought about when she was supplementing with testosterone. She starts to get anxious. She starts to get, like I said, a bit aggressive. So anyway, so I've literally just taken her on, and this is the first test that I've run. I've also done some bloods and a couple of other tests as well, but I'm just waiting for them to come back. So this is the first test result I've got back, and the reason I wanted to go over it is because I haven't actually gone through a Dutch test when someone's been taking oral hormones before. I've only done it if they've been taking bioidenticals or supplements. So I just wanted to ask your advice really on it and get your opinion.
Yeah. So this is the Dutch test. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a urine test that basically does, it's not a 24-hour collection like Valley would do, but what it does is it basically has them do like similar to what you do for the saliva adrenals, that there's points throughout the day, like four different points, that they pee on the little strip and they send it in. So it's a much easier test to run than having to have them collect 24 hours of urine. And it's easier than the saliva because there's not a whole lot of stuff. You're going to pee anyway. You're not usually going to spit, but you're going to pee anyway. And it gives you, like, the ranges at different points. The other advantage of a test like this that's over and above taking a blood test is that it gives you the metabolites. So if you were to run a blood test, you could just see estradiol. Sometimes they can do estrone as well. Testosterone, most of the time they don't. And you just see the one hormone. You don't see the metabolites. So the first page here gives a summary, and they do it with these little dials. And as you can see, where she's looking, it says the total estrogen is very high. That's the red, right? So the range we're expecting for her would be, is she perimenopausal or?
No, she's not. She's, how old is she? She's 40, oh, you can see her age there. So she's 40.
Oh, yeah, she's, okay, good. Yeah, so she's 40, so she wouldn't be falling. This wouldn't be the normal range for her, this this low
she's
part.
Taking estradiol, yeah.
Taking it, right. So her where she should be, and if you can point to it up to that first thing, the total estrogen with your cursor, because they won't see mine. See, she should be between 27 and 62, right? On this first.
Zoom in, it's not better.
Good, yeah. She should be between 27 and 62, but she's at 108.5, so she's clearly way above that range, but she's taking it. So we're going to look. This is her sum, and we're going to look to see how that breaks down, because the concern when they're taking estrogen, especially oral estrogen, is that we want to make sure that the metabolites that are being produced are not the dangerous metabolites. Same thing here. Well, with the progesterone, look at how much her progesterone is. She's below the range, 17, right? So on the progesterone.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, don't flip yet. On the progesterone, we're always looking for progesterone and estrogen. That's fine. Ratios, right? So she's clearly estrogen dominant, and estrogen dominance is not a safe place to be. So I don't know. She's not taking any progesterone, right? I don't see that listed.
No, not that I'm aware of. She didn't list it. So.
First of all, when you have a doctor that prescribes estrogen without progesterone, you know that they're not a very functionally oriented doctor. You know they're probably not keeping up with the research real well, because generally it's considered unsafe to give unopposed estrogen. You should always be giving progesterone and then monitoring the estrogen-progesterone ratios so that the progesterone dominates the estrogen, or that they're, you know, relatively the same, but really the progesterone should dominate. And her testosterone is not, it's clearly right within the range. So, you know, because of the aggression, you've been thinking maybe it's the testosterone is up, but it may not be related to the testosterone. But here's one thing to keep in mind when somebody's supplementing with hormones. What it does is it spares the precursors to allow those precursors to be moved down wherever the body chooses. And if this person is under a lot of stress and you're giving testosterone, it's going to be able to make more cortisol. If the person's under stress, higher levels of cortisol, and that might be related to some of the feelings that she's getting. But we can also look at some of the metabolites, because if they're in like the DHT range of this testosterone, because of the way it's being moved through the pathways, that could be leading to aggression as well. So I've even seen that with people who had low testosterone, but the DHT was high relative to the testosterone, and that created that aggression kind of feeling. And this is for female. I'm assuming these ranges are female ranges, that they show different ranges for males. So,
right.
Okay, because it would be way different.
Yeah.
If you look at her chart here down below that where it says adrenal hormones, you'll see a more detailed on further pages, but this is just giving you the overall picture. And they show waking, but I'm not sure when they take that. Is that taken like at 4 in the morning? Because
it's immediately upon awakening. So literally as soon as you wake up, you do the first test.
And then what time is that morning one done?
2 hours after waking.
Okay, so they're assuming that person's waking and okay, all right, good. So this is a little different than what the saliva tests do. They usually tell you to do it. They give you a range of time, so somewhere between 6 and 8. But the waking, yeah, okay. So look at the range of the cortisol, right, the low and the high, and look at where she is. So she's fine in the when she first wakes up, and then she shoots way high first thing in the morning. So there's definitely some stress going on here. We'd want to be knowing what that stress is, what's happening in those first 2 hours of her day that's causing her cortisol to go that high. And then her afternoon one is still above the mark, and then her nighttime one is down at the bottom of the mark. So I want to look at this in more detail, but I'm just showing you this to show you the overall range here. The DHEA is right within the middle of the range. The free cortisol, you see the total is high, the 24-hour, when they add all those together. And then the metabolites, which is cortisol, that's compared to cortisone, and we'll look at that chart, is on the lower side. So there's clearly something going on compared to the free cortisol versus the metabolites. So go and scrunch this up so we could see the estrogen page, the first page.
Do you want the values or the dials?
No, not the, no, the, I want to see the values and then we can look at the dials. Do they go into the details on the dial? I don't remember. But I want to see these numbers so I can see, well, this first page actually. Yeah, scoot it over. There you go.
Let me just zoom in. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to put it back to one page. It's easier to see then. Okay,
yes.
Here you go.
Okay, good. Yeah, so this is the summary page that shows you all the different hormones and the metabolites. So unlike a blood test, it's just telling you the absolute value of the hormone itself. It's not showing you the metabolites. On this one, the progesterone metabolites are measured by two different measures. It's beta and alpha pregnenidiol, because the progesterone is just, you can't capture it in the urine. So these are metabolic products of it. So the beta is above range. The alpha is within range, barely above range. It's interesting compared to that first page. I guess they were totaling them together.
Correct.
And the estrogens, right, are high end of the range for DHEA, but these others, low end of the range for androstenedione. I like to look at the pictures. So this is going to look like Greek to you at this point, but when you look at the flow, I love to look at the flow charts, because if I see that a certain hormone is high but a downstream metabolite is low, I want to know, why is it stuck? Why isn't it converting? Is there a problem with a cofactor? Or what is interfering with that mechanism?
Do you want me to flick the dials then for you?
What's that?
Do you want me to flick the dials for you?
Is there a way to get the dials next to this?
On
the subsequent pages. Before we go look at the dials, I just want to quickly look at this. So the bottom part showing you the normal ranges of these different estrogen metabolites, but depending on where she was, I'm assuming if she did it according to what they wanted her to do, she's in her luteal phase. Luteal phase meaning the second half of the cycle. Usually they like to see it around 8.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are the normal ranges for that. See, when you look here, they have just a single normal range there, but really for estrogen, you ignore that and you come down below. Or what is it? No. Okay, so let's look at that. So there's E1, E2, E3. Those are the big estrogens, right? E3 is estriol, and that's the one that should be, the summer should be a lot higher. They don't calculate what's called the estrogen quotient here, but I like to calculate the estrogen quotient. And the estrogen quotient, I could tell right now that her estrogen quotient is going to be less than 1, and this person is at risk. So her number, she's taking way too much of this hormone, and it's not converting properly. Because if you look at E1, E2, E3, E3 divided by the sum of E1 and E2 should be greater than 1. Clearly it's not, because we have 40 as E1 and 7, so she's got a 47.8. 7 versus a 27, she's probably at a 0.3. And that puts her at risk. That suggests that she's low in iodine, because iodine is needed in the pathways that convert between the estrone and estradiol and into estriol. So she's probably low in iodine, but she's also at risk of hormone-related cancers. So that's a red flag for me, and that's something I'd want to be addressing right away. What is she taking? Estradiol, right?
Yeah.
So estradiol easily converts to estrone. Estrone is the most potent one. It's also the most dangerous one. So you don't usually give people E1. But she's clearly converting there. And I don't know if the picture is here, but we have it. We'll go through it when we do that module. We have a picture that shows you the different food and nutrient factors that help convert between the different estrogens. So if somebody's got something out of range, you can look at that and go, ooh, she's got too much of this in her diet, or not enough magnesium, or not enough iodine, et cetera. And that's the beauty of really looking at the biochemistry. So I don't know if they show it here, but I know that Meridian Valley, I just had mine out. Yeah, here it is. Meridian Valley shows a really cool chart. And we're going to try to get some more of these. They sent us a bunch of these for Shine last year. But let's see. So some of the things, she's low in, looking to see if it has that chart. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Precision Hormones actually did a good steroidal hormone chart with all the cofactors and everything. I don't know if I've got it on. Here we go. I've actually got it here. Steroids.
Oh, you have it. Oh, good. Because I think I showed it in the. I think it's actually. Oh, here's one. Oh, good. Yeah. So where's the E? This is a hard one to read.
Here you go. Here are the E1, E2, E3.
Yeah. So we're looking at E1, E2, E3, right? So here's some of the things that can be helping and interfering. I have a simplified one, and it's actually in, I think it's in the intro. I think it's in the very first module is a picture of it. So E1, E2, so she's converting her E2, this isn't, yeah, so she's converting her E2 to E1, and, you know, clearly when she's taking it, she's not taking progestins, as far as you know. Yeah, this one's not as easy to read. Mine has more.
Yeah, the increased production is inflammation, visceral obesity, DHEA, phosgolan, and alcohol. And the decreased is the phytoestrogens, licorice, progestins, and tamoxifen.
Oh, I see it above. I see it. Yeah, I see it.
But it doesn't mention so many foods.
It doesn't mention so many foods, and there are some, you know, charbroils and stuff like that. If let's just look real quick. I'll pull it up, and I'll give you a link so you guys can look at it, because this is something that, you know, where knowing the biochemistry and having some simple charts really helps you to see how you can help somebody when they get out of balance. So if I go to, let's see, the overview, pretty sure it's in that overview presentation. And content, I think it's overview and relationship. It's either the first or the second one. It's probably the second one in presentation in there. And it's just one of the slides. Let me look at the slides real quick. In here. Ah, there it is. Yeah, it is. It's in that, let me give you the link. It's towards the end. So it's basically, let me open up the big one. Towards the end, I can tell you the page. Here's the link. Copy. And we'll put it in here. Where's our, that, I still have to sort of chat while you're, I've got you on the screen. How do I get back to my own chat? Missing my chat. It didn't take my chat away. It's been weird. I thought I still had control of my chat, but apparently I don't have control of my chat when I give you control. Give me control back again, and I'll put this sheet up, and I'll give them the link, and then we can come back to you.
Okay, let me just have a look. How do I get past presenter role, yeah? Back to... Okay.
All right, so I'm going to put this link in the chat, and then I'll show it to you. And then I'm scrolling down to it. I will share my screen. All right, there we go. Let me move my chat out of the way. And it's down here. I like this chart because it really makes it clear on the protective effects and the non-protective effects. And it's like page 28 of that link I just gave you, but you'll see on the screen. So she's got high levels of estrone and lower levels of estradiol. And let's look at the, what's her 2-hydroxy here? How do I get, can't both share screens at the same time. I wish we could. I wish, can you go to this page and be able to have that on your screen along with?
Sure.
Yeah, go there and that way we can go back and forth. You see here where her estriol, here, let me give you this, estradiol, Jamie. You could see where this iodine is so important. the 16-hydroxy and the estriol. The estriol is protective, and the iodine is one of those pieces. Okay, great. So Jamie's going to open that document there and go to page, what did we say, 31?
Can you see my screen now?
I see your screen, yeah.
Perfect. You can see these dials.
Yeah. So the estrone is high, the estradiol is high, and the estriol, it shows them all as high, but you've got to look at relatively high. So they're all high because she's taking it. So I think she's probably taking too much, is my guess. But you can see the ratio, the estriol should be like, it should be greater than the sum of the other two. Let's look at those methoxies. I like the numbers better. I'm a little old-fashioned here. And can you open that presentation that I just gave you the link in the chat so we have that?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me just...
31 in there.
This one, yeah. Okay.
Then you can just shrink that one screen and have them lay next to each other.
Okay, so you're on this here and this.
It was like page 31. Oh, no, 27 or something like that. It's close to the end.
Okay.
There you go.
27. Okay. Okay. What was this one?
There it is. Yeah. So
okay.
He has too much of all of those hormones. But the ratio, even if she had too much of stuff, but the estrogen quotient, you see the estrogen quotient is listed as E3 divided by E1 plus E2. If we did hers out, it's probably about 0.3. So she's at risk, right? Dangerous metabolite. So what we want to do is look up what her 16-hydroxy is, okay? Because it's clear that her estrone, it's not going down to the estriol. I'm guessing that her 16-hydroxy is going to be high. Show that here in this.
6.3.
The ratios, what it should be.
Say again, what are you looking for, Rich Marie? The ratios.
Yeah, so her 16-hydroxy and her 4-hydroxy are high. And it doesn't matter the ratios as much, but the relative amount, because these are dangerous metabolites. 4-hydroxy is especially dangerous. Okay? So the ratios are actually not as bad. They're not really that bad. She is 70% compared to 69. So her ratios aren't that bad. She's got 10% of... And he's got 20. So the ratios aren't that bad, but it's really the amount that are dangerous. So if she wasn't converting this way and she was going more towards the 2-hydroxy and that was high and the estriol was high, then I'd say I wouldn't be concerned about high levels if everything was in balance. But look at those numbers. Those are dangerous levels, 6.3 and 2.5. They're way above the range on 4-hydroxy, 16-hydroxy, and those are carcinogenic. Especially though the 4-hydroxy is. Okay. Now, the thing about it is if we look at what kind of things would convert, we want more of a conversion down to 2-hydroxy. So if she's going to stay on these levels, right, you don't have say in that because she's got a doctor that's put her on this stuff. But if she's going to stay there, the 2-hydroxy is what you want these estrogens to be pushed towards. So you don't mind if she has estrone, but her estrone's really high. It's not being converted adequately to the 2-hydroxy. So DIM, I3C, those are extracts of cruciferous. You can do things like sulforaphane or broccoli sprout powder or something like that, or broccoli sprouts to try to push those pathways. You check with her to see if she's exercising, is she?
She does exercise. She does exercise, yeah.
Okay, so that's probably not an issue. I don't know if she's – I'm not a big fan of soy, but flax. It's the isoflavones, so isoflavone-rich foods. I'd look at her omega-3s and her omega-3-6 ratios. And then, of course, progesterone helps that go. And her relative numbers of progesterone are a lot lower. So a simple starting solution, a starting place would be to have her talk to her doctor about getting progesterone or if it's considered a supplement over the counter over there, it is here, you can get her an over the counter progesterone cream and get her doing that. Now, I don't know why she's got, the doctor has her taking the oral estrogens, because that's when they're the most unsafe. So I think she's much better off taking a topical estrogen, a vulva, you know, or mucosal, transmucosal application of estrogen. So they can either apply the cream vaginally, or they can apply the cream on the anal mucosa, and that's going to get it in there with a lot less dose, and it's going to get a lot better absorbed. And that's what I would be doing, and I would probably have her do a cream that's higher percent, maybe a 50-50 on estriol, estradiol. So those are ways that you can get in there and help her to talk to her doctor. I would probably go with a 50-50 cream of estriol and estradiol and can the oral estrogens. I wouldn't do the oral estrogen.
Does she even need estrogen, though? Does she even need this, you know, looking at her numbers?
Well, we don't know what she's like without it.
Yeah.
Right? She maybe have no estrogen without it, so we don't know. But she's in her 30s, so why is she on it? That would be my question. Why'd they put her on
no,
it in
she's
the first
40. She's 44. 72.
44.
Okay.
Yeah. So is she starting to have menopausal symptoms? Is that what prompted it?
Partly, yeah. That was, I mean, to be honest, I haven't gone into a huge amount of detail with her yet. I've just done a strategy, you know, sort of session with her and started to look at her hormones. So I would need to look through all, this just came through literally from Precision Analytics just while we were on the call. So
So the things I would be looking at are some of the dietary things laid out on here. Does she have, is she exposed to pesticides? Get her on organic food, get her off alcohol. You know, looking at her fats, does she have a lot of omega-6 fat foods in her diet, you know, as opposed to omega-3. So the basic food stuff. But as far as what she's doing right now, if you can convince her to talk to her doctor about getting off of that oral estrogen, I think it's going to be much safer, because I just don't see, there's too much evidence that oral estrogens are not safe, and especially given the high levels of the 16 and the 4-hydroxy. So I would be having her on a cream that favors the estriol, and then you can do another test in a few months, 50-50 probably at this point, to try to bring it into balance, right?
Yeah.
And then whatever body needs for estrone, you'll get it. You'll get the estradiol will convert. This should have a backward arrow, but it doesn't. But the estradiol can go back to estrone, and then you want the estrone to be downstream moving towards the 2-hydroxy, which is very protective.
Sure.
Okay?
Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Much appreciated.
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
One question I had on this before we move off it. In terms of bringing down her cortisol and improving her cortisol receptors, obviously reducing stress and lifestyle factors,
right.
But in terms of supplementation, what have you found the most effective for doing this? You know, typically
I use
phosphatidylserine and magnolia. And that's just...
Magnolia are the most effective. Sometimes rhodiola can be helpful. And ashwagandha, you know, some of the adaptogens can go both ways, but if you're really looking for something to bring down that high level, I'd probably have her do some phosphatidylserine or magnolia.
Yeah.
And whether she's having difficulty sleeping, probably not, given how low it is at bedtime. And there, it's just she's spiking. And finding out what's happening in those first 2 hours that might be creating
sure.
a body. Maybe it's something she's eating. Maybe she's, you know, sitting down to an Egg McMuffin.
No. She eats clean. They eat clean. They've got their own chickens, and they eat all organic, you know, pastured foods and stuff. So they do. I know they do eat clean because they're very, specific.
Well, that could
say
be.
Say again, sorry.
Does she have children that she's getting off to school at that time of day?
She has 3 daughters, all with hormonal issues. So I've run Dutch tests and fatty acids tests and blood tests and all sorts of stuff on the whole family. So
Okay, yeah, so that could be it, that you know, morning routines when you have 3 kids, 3 school-age kids,
yeah.
Be brutal. So really some of the lifestyle stuff and, you know, tapping heart math to get her to calm down, but maybe just having her upon awakening, have a little magnolia. Probably magnolia would be a good one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been using this, there's an app called HRV4 Training. I just thought I'd mention it, that I've been using. I think it's similar to HeartMath in a way, heart rate variability training, using the, you know, the camera sensor on the phone. So I've been using that. I'm just trying it out.
Oh, yeah, I did that for a while. I did that, and then it stopped working on me. The app stopped working. It just had some you know, I don't know, some other kind of
maybe
stuff.
They're
that
updating. I know they've been changing it quite a bit, so.
Yeah, it's excellent. Anything you can do to get that feedback. And that was cool because I could just stick my finger on the sensor and I would get it. And then it stopped playing. It stopped working. It just showed me games. But like HeartMath or any of the others. We've been using this thing. I want to write up about it when I get a chance. It's something called the Muse. And it's not related to heart rate variability, but it helps with meditation. So it's measuring your brain waves. So are you in alpha, beta, gamma? And it does a little test to see what your brain looks like when you do this little kind of thinking activity. And then it goes in, and you're breathing and you're doing some meditation. You can do 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And what it does is it gives you feedback if you start to go into that active state. And it basically, the sounds that it's making, it's the wind picks up and it goes, sounds like a hurricane. And so you go, oh, yeah, okay, bring it back. And it's been awesome. I'm going to get another one because my husband took the one and I don't get to use it because he uses it like throughout the day. He just kind of stops and has these 3-minute meditation breaks and he's all excited because he got up to 92% calm in a 30-minute session. So, you know, it's kind of like you play a game and, you know, it's very, very cool. So we'll look into it. And I got a link from them that I'll be sharing.
Yeah, we've been doing a few meditations here. There's a class literally just in the town next to us, and there's a Buddhist monk that comes, and there's a traditional Chinese medicine acupuncturist, and they come and they talk about all the different organs and how it relates. So last week they were talking all about the liver and wood, and everyone bought a wood instrument, and they played, you know, music and vibration for the liver. It's really quite fascinating, you know, understanding the interactions. So.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing you're going to have her do. But in the meantime, I think she's over hormoned and she's taking it in the wrong way. And I think you can get some really good results and get her safer if you add the progesterone or have her talk to her doctor about adding the progesterone and then doing the cream, 50-50 cream.
What's it like measuring the progesterone in the urine if she's taking progesterone cream?
Well, you'll see it high. You'll see it high, and that it's not a problem. I mean, you're still going to look at the videos, right? So it will be high, and the same thing with if you do saliva. You're going to see high levels, and they actually have on some of the lab tests, they'll say what the normal levels are and what the supplemented levels are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it even says here, progesterone serum equivalent is calculated based on urine. This value may not accurately when taken by mouth of progesterone. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. Much appreciated. Rich,
welcome. So give me back the
I will give you back control.
That way I can see my chat. Very cool. Okay. So normally these calls are more for other content in the program, but since nobody had their hands up, I decided that was a good one to do. It may have been confusing for you to go through that. But it's stuff we will go through that in a lot of detail when we get to that module, and it'll make sense to you. But it gives you an idea of just what's available for you for testing and that it's not just a matter of, oh, this is the urine, the amount that's in the blood, or even looking at the test, these numbers look okay. It's really looking at all those metabolites that can be dangerous. So we said thanks for going through that. Great. Glad. If saliva test shows that your progesterone is higher than estrogen, would there be a need to get a Dutch test? Well, yes. There's a lot of value to do it. Would there be a need? I'm not sure, but there would be value because the test will show the metabolites. And so you might have a higher progesterone than estrogen. Maybe it's just marginally higher. Maybe it's a lot higher. But then when you look at the estrogen, if the estrogens are still predominating towards estrone or estradiol, and the estriol is low, or if there's a high level of 4-hydroxy or 16-hydroxy, you're putting yourself in an unsafe situation. So there's always a value to it. There's not as much of a need to do it as a value to do it. Let's see. So Tony, I'm going to open up your line. Hey there, Tony.
Hey there. Wait a minute. Did you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can, just fine.
Yes. Hi. First of all, thank you, Jenny, for sharing that case. The more I hear and even, I know we haven't studied that in depth, but the more I hear, the more I understand. And the first time I saw those pathways, I was like, what?
I know.
So I'm not to say that it's not still a little daunting, but it's getting less and less. So I appreciate these opportunities to hear. So thank you, Jeannie, for sharing that. What else? And I want to thank you for the wonderful things that are coming up. I'm so excited about the ability to be able to track my studies and what I've done to my qualifications and all that. And I think that's really a value added that you're doing for us. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And then I was inspired by how you teach us to help me do newsletters and blogs, because I've been very hesitant about doing it. It seemed very hard for me. And what I realized is I have to stay with what I like to do, which is teaching, but it will also help me to learn. So what I'm going to do is break into a module, learn something, and then share a nugget or two with people in the form of a blog called Take
Back Tony. Oh, I love it. That's a great idea, Tony.
So,
I love that. You're going to learn more when you teach. That's how you learn the best, is when you teach. And so if you take that and you just take the most clinically relevant or what's relevant to your audience and you write about it. Wow, I love it.
I'm so excited. And I want to tell people that I was only able to get that phrase, Take Five with Tony, because I attended retreats, or I attended a retreat, or I attended a Shine conference where I met Teresa Tapp. And also you brought that out in me too, that, you know, I have something to give to people. And so I've been not struggling, but playing around, because I'd rather call it playing, because struggling takes on a whole different connotation in my brain and my heart. So I've been playing around with what is my lane and exploring, and my business is growing as a result in a direction that maybe I would not have been able to understand that it was going without having Spotlight Coaching with you, and also, you know, the group Facebook discussions and just all the support. So I want to encourage people, if you can make it to the retreat, come on, let us love up on you and love up on each other.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to share that with you, that I had an aha moment. I'm inspired to do that. So thank you.
I love that idea. You know, it reminds me of something Shonda said that she was doing, that she was making handouts from her stuff. So she'll take a lesson and she'll learn it and she'll go, okay, what can I make a handout out of this? And we're gonna actually have you do that, because that'll be an assignment. But you can actually do it for yourself. Like if you want a cheat sheet. So say we go through vitamin B9 and we had a really good talk on folate and all the methylation and all those other things, and you're looking through that going, oh, this is a lot. What would I want to teach my clients? What are the things I want to remember? And you can make these little cheat sheets for yourself and also for your clients, a way to reinforce the learning.
I love that too. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's how I got through school, by the way. Everybody wanted my notes, because that's how I studied. I could not sit down and just study. I'm just not a memorizer. So what I would do is I would take the information and I would create it into charts. I was the chart queen, and I would have the chart of this and the chart of that. And, you know, if I was studying muscles, I'd have a chart of all the muscles, and then it would have their origin, insertion, and action, et cetera. Then I'd make an action chart, and I'd go flexion of the knee, extension of the thigh, you know, flexion of the elbow, whatever, and I'd list all the actions, and then I'd list all the muscles that went with that. Then I'd have another chart that would show origins and what are all the muscles that start there. So I'm just giving you an example of muscles because it was the one that came to my mind. But I would organize and arrange and rearrange my material. I have to study it at the end. And if I, because for real life, all I'd have to do is have my cheat sheets available for me, right? But for studying for exams, it was so fresh in my mind because I'd just gone through that I didn't have to study. And it made these very practical, useful charts.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for letting me share that. I appreciate you so much, as always, for doing what you do.
Oh, I'm so glad we're going to get to see you in May. Yay.
Yes.
Was it on?
You're a lot of...
in business.
In the background, I'm not sure what that is.
You did it.
I did. I just thought it was.
See, is that Tony? Somebody's open. Oh, I left Jamie open. There we go. That's why I was hearing a British accent. Okay. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Stuff that you want to share? Stuff that you want to know? Yeah. See if there's any other comments on the chat. So Michelle says that even I want to share that even though I'm new to NEPS, I found that going over the Dutch test with Jamie very educational. It really inspires me to learn more so I can help clients in this way too. Martha says, love the sharing, great way to learn and be encouraged. Yeah, so this is what we're going to do, and we're just going to keep doing it. And by the time we get to that reproductive module, it's going to be like a review for you. You know, and we'll go into a little bit more depth, but it'll be a review because we've gone over it in little bits and pieces here and there. Same thing with thyroid and adrenal. We've talked a lot about those in cases. And then when we finally come down to the structure of module and the videos and all the worksheets that you'll get with those, it's just going to be a piece of cake. So we will be putting up soon, probably in that micronutrient, the assignment. For those of you who already submitted your assignment, great. We will be getting back to you. I'm so sorry for the delay. We probably assigned it too soon, but yeah, it was good. Let's see. Sequoia said, can I ask you a question about security? Sure. Let me open up your line and see if we can get you speaking. I think I have to stop sharing my screen, and then I go here, and I take it off mute. Others can talk. Okay, so you should speak.
The conference is now in conversation mode.
So if you're on and you've got some noise in your background on the web part, just shut your line, just hit mute for yourself, and Sequoia, you're open. So go ahead. Nope. You might have to unmute your phone itself. You want to type your question in, Sequoia? Did you have a question about security? Here you are. Speak. Who is that? Is that Martha? Hi. Who's that?
Hi, this is Martha.
Oh, hi, Martha.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. And I don't hear Sequoia, so I don't know what's happening. Sequoia, you're welcome to... You're welcome to type it. There you go. You're welcome, Jamie. All right. Well, I guess not Sequoia. It's somehow we're having a hard time, so either you'll have to call in or type your question in because I'm not hearing you on the web. In the meantime, anybody else? Any last questions, comments? Thanks, Jamie, for sharing that. I love going over those, and you learn something new each time you go over it. And I've been doing those. I started doing those tests with Meridian Valley about, I want to say 5 years ago. I think it was 2010, so it might have been almost, yeah, 5.5 years ago. It was probably towards the end. And at first it was like gibberish to me, but I took advantage of the labs. Any of the labs that say when you run the test will give you a free consultation, even if you think you know everything about that test, get on their free consultation because there's always opportunity to learn more. So the first time I got on to talk about one of these tests, I was like, you know, it's like deer in the headlights, like, oh, my God, what is all this? And then they went through it with me, and then the next time I went through it myself first, and then I got on and asked some questions, and they gave me more information. And now I just kind of go through it. I mark it all up myself. I get an idea of what it is that I think is going on, and then we chat, and then usually the things that they provide me in terms of consult now is more on the dosing, because I don't dose hormones, I don't prescribe them, so my dosing skills are not all that great. So I will talk to them, and they'll say, well, it should be a, you know, this cream or that cream or whatever. They'll give me kind of the recommended doses for stuff, but it's really good. And Jamie said, Dr. Carrie Jones from Precision is really helpful if you have questions. That's great. I haven't actually talked to them yet. Because I've done maybe three or four of them. But I need to do more, and I need to actually get on the phone with them. I'm actually going to run one on myself if I get around to it. So, anybody else? Will you be sending out an email when the recording and chat are ready to listen and read? Yeah, we always do that. I personally don't, so I can't vouch for when, but usually by the next day. We almost always do it the next day after these simple calls where there's not a recording. We won't actually see the Dutch test on the recording because I didn't turn that on. Could have, I guess, but we didn't. So you'll just get to listen to that. Yeah, you'll definitely get that, Michelle. All of these are recorded, and you can go to the website, and you can click on the recordings tab, and they're all there by date. Mail business. So Sequoia has a question about something. Okay. Hushmail for healthcare. Use Hushmail with confidence, knowing you can add HIPAA compliance encryption to emails protected. Yeah, I don't know. I don't do any of that, but looks interesting. So you know, if you've got to be careful of the various. HIPAA compliance, I'm not sure how much the HIPAA compliance applies if you're a health coach versus a licensed healthcare practitioner. But I don't know much about this, but I'd be happy to look at it and let you know what I think. Sequoia, you're on the phone? Okay, let me go open you. Find my... Oh, here we go. There we are. Hi, Sequoia.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Anne!
Right. Yeah, I was just a bit concerned about emails and about forms online and those kinds of things to make sure they're secure and Skype and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably something we need to look into. We've just done it. Contracted with an attorney to help us with all of those things to make sure we're in compliance with all that stuff so I can let you know when we know more. But, yeah, probably the forms, the online forms. I always tell people if they're concerned about that they would make sure they put in a different name so people can't track it to them, or some people actually create separate email IDs, you know, and not to be transferring real identifiable behavior back and forth. If they're taking a insulin resistance quiz, for example, it's not as a big a deal as if they're passing along, you know, their records and all that. And like what Jamie probably should not have that her name showed on there. So yeah, when we have you do it for our calls where we're doing case studies, we always have you submit and make sure that person's name is off of it. Unless you've got their
There's privacy policies in different countries, and
yep.
I think in even within the provinces and the states. And so, yeah, I just want to make sure that we comply with everything. So
right.
If you have more information, that would be great.
Yeah, and it's going to vary, like you said, because you're in Canada versus here. And I don't know if it varies state. I think it's pretty much federal in the U.S., but it's going to vary. You know, it would be different for Jamie in England or Portugal and you in Canada versus us. So whenever I know anything, I'll let you know what we find out.
I know it's easy enough for to make the forms secure forms. I know that part's easy.
Oh, yeah, right. Why am I thinking about this? We do. We have we prefer secure server thing, so all of our forms are secure. What am I thinking?
Yeah, but we have to make sure, you know, just awareness that everybody needs to do that, right?
Yeah, and it's cheap to get a security certificate. It's like $10 a year to have a security certificate on your website.
Mm. Yeah, that was just my question. So if you have more information, like emails and anything else.
But emails are an issue. But emails probably the bigger issue because they're identifiable and people are sending stuff back and forth that way. But that's, you know, part of the reason why we have you use mock forms for sending our stuff, because the mock forms is a secure server.
Okay, and the link I put in, they provides secure emails as well.
Provides it for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can have just that one special email that you use just for that stuff if you wanted to maintain your, you know, your email at whatever your URL is. Thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, thank you so far. That was very instructive. I really enjoyed seeing the Dutch test. I've never seen one before, so that was great.
Oh, good. Yeah. They're becoming more and more. If you get on there, Jamie sent me their email, their user. I think they have a newsletter. If you go to their site, precisionanalytics.com, and I think I get their emails. Put them into here. Put them in here. And they periodically do studies, and they have cases on their site, and they have a lot of videos on their site. So if you go out there, you can learn a lot about the testing. I think it's Precision Analytics, and just look up Precision Analytics Dutch and get on their email.
Okay, thanks.
.com? Jamie says it's DutchTest.com. Okay?
Great. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for bringing it up. So thank you all.
This is now in presentation mode.
Thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it, and appreciate all the feedback and the questions and all that stuff. And I'm so looking forward to seeing you guys in May. So be sure to let us know if you're going to be coming, and we'll get out the sign up as soon as we can. So thank you all. Bye-bye.